I don't know if I was just thinking about writing it, but I totally thought I'm not
going to write it. Good afternoon. Are there questions?
Just go see Amin.
Because I told that those who want can hand in homework on Monday. And you're the one who is organized and has his homework done.
That was a B.
Well, if you're a graduate student, you're looking, oh, I can, 2 more days.
That's like an eternity.
Yeah.
2 days.
Man, what kind of what I can get accomplished?
I would have tuned in on Monday if I didn't agree.
You want to have help?
You're on
you
yeah.
Like it's done already.
Yeah.
Actually,
so enjoy your free weekend.
But like, the bottom material is
I have the next homework assignment to do.
I think Alex.
Not for me.
There is that.
Yeah.
There it is.
Because you're in like physics and stuff too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. What flavor
of physics? I didn't do
anything. So there's no such thing as a free
game.
So, we basically had stopped with a formulation of, well, which I labeled as a corollary, though you can argue that it's a theorem in its own right, above which is justifying a method for finding a maximum matching in a bipartite graph. And the method goes under the name of the Hungarian method, and what it does is to say if the matching is not maximal, we know, then there must be a matching, the size of the matching must be strictly smaller than the size of a minimal cover, and in that case we want to find what is called an augmenting path. This is a path which goes from one vertex over a non-matched edge, then a matched edge, a non-matched edge, a matched edge, a non-matched edge. And what we do is simply we flip the status of all the edges in this path. And since we start and end with an edge which is not in the matching, we will, after flipping, have one more edge. And in the matching, so the matching gets larger, and because we assume all vertices but the starting and the end one are already on an edge before in the matching, so I can switch that edge without violating the matching property there. At the end vertices, I can do so because these were explicitly assumed to be vertices which are not involved with the matching so far. So that's what we want to do. The process simply says find such an augmenting path, and what I now want to do is I want to show that indeed we always have such paths. So this is corollary 4.6, and I have slightly reformulated it from how I wrote it down last time to, because anyhow I had to fix it to avoid assuming that we have a matching of, that we have a cover of minimal size. So what we now just have is if we have a matching and a cover, and the size of the matching is smaller than the size of the cover, then there is a smaller cover or a larger matching. And the proof, in some way, you can interpret as a construction. You can basically follow through what is happening there, and that would give you a method how you could construct that augmenting path of a smaller matching. The reason why I didn't write it down as an algorithm is that one then needs to deal with various cases. At some point, I'm using induction, and if you do this in an algorithm, you need to somehow deal with re-indexing or so. So the proof is by induction on the number of vertices in the set of vertices. Okay, and there are two cases. I will I need to consider. So, what can happen is, if the number, if the size of the matching is smaller than the size of the cover, that means we cannot have a vertex of the cover, that we cannot, not every edge of the matching can have a vertex of the cover on it. But what can also happen is the case, what I would like to do is to say, take a vertex which is not on a match of the cover, which is not on a matched edge, but what could happen is that you pick your covers, or that, depending how you pick the cover, and the example I had on the board last time was actually of this kind, that I have two, that I have an edges of the matching which have two vertices on the cover. So that is one of the cases I need to consider. So let's say case one, this is the situation that I have two vertices. There exists two vertices V and W in the cover, such that the edge between these vertices is an edge of the matching. Okay. And what I will do here is I will sketch a picture of what is happening there, because I think that will illustrate better what is happening. So I have V, I have W, and I will use the circle to indicate that it is part of the vertex cover, and I will use red to indicate an edge which is in the matching, and white to indicate an edge, which is, so I assume I have this situation. Okay. What I will also do, I will not write the whole text on the board, because this is in some way a text-based argument. There are the notes on the web, and you will find it as a full description. But I will try rather to describe what is happening there. So, what I claim is that both vertices must be adjacent to other edges. Why that? Because if one of them is not incident with other edges, let's say V, that was the only edge on which V was, I could simply take V out of the vertex cover. Right? And the same for W. If W is not incident with any other edge, then I don't need W to be part of the vertex cover, because that edge is already covered by V. So, I can conclude both V and W must be incident to other edges, and these edges obviously cannot be part of the matching, because that would violate the matching property. So, we know that then there are edges V, V1 and W1 in the graph, in the set of edges. So I give a name to these vertices. This is V1, and I have a vertex W1 here. And what I claim is that, yes, so this is a comma, that V1 is not part of the vertex cover. Why that? Because if every edge incident to V has the vertex on the other side in the vertex cover, then V would not have to be in the vertex cover. So, I know there is such a vertex V1 which is not part of the cover. Right. If these two vertices are free, I'm done. I have an augmenting path. So, if they are not free, so if V1, W1 are free, then we are done. Otherwise, one of them, and without loss of generality, I assume that it is V1, is on a matched edge. So, it's not free, so that it must be an incident with an edge and matching that would go to some other vertex, V2, and to achieve vertex cover, because this is not part of the vertex cover, this needs to be part of the vertex cover. Okay, and what I'm now doing is, well, in an algorithm I would have a loop and I would say I want to extend this path further. I now want to say I can basically leave out these things in the middle. Let me do this in another color so it doesn't look that messy. So, what I now want to do is I want to say I must have the same situation as before. Let's take these things out. So I take these three edges out and I add, if it doesn't exist before, an edge here, and I make this edge part of the matching. So I now have a smaller graph because I have thrown two vertices out and I still have a matching. Right? These two vertices were part of matched edges. I've taken the matched edges away so I can make this a matched edge. So I have created a matching in a graph with a smaller number of vertices. By induction, I know in this smaller graph there must be either in the smaller graph, and I keep the vertices of the vertex cover. These two are gone, but the other ones I keep. And I'm basically now in the same situation, but in a smaller graph. I have an edge in the matching so that both end vertices are part of the vertex cover. For an algorithm now, one would say, okay, iterate this process and build the path that way, and essentially I will move vertices from the vertex cover away. Or for the existence proof, I just say by induction now in this newer graph. So now consider new graph gamma prime, which has a vertex set V prime and an edge set E prime, where V prime is the old vertex set minus V and V1, and the edge set is the edge set together, if it didn't exist before, with an edge from V2 to W. And of course I remove the edges which involve V or V1. That's a smaller graph. This smaller graph either has a small, in this smaller graph I have a matching and I have a vertex cover. In this smaller graph, my matching has one less edge, right? I've removed two edges from the matching and I added one edge. And it has a vertex cover, which is one less because I've thrown away one vertex from the vertex cover. But if they were before different, they're still different. So the new graph has a matching which is strictly smaller than the vertex cover which we have. Either we could throw something out, we can find a smaller vertex cover by induction, and then we take the smaller vertex cover and add V, and that will be a vertex cover for the old graph. Or we find an augmenting path, and if the augmenting path somehow involves this edge which we added, Well, then we just take it out and replace it with these edges, and it still will be an augmenting path. So, by induction, gamma prime has smaller cover, or an augmenting path, and transfer these to the original graph gamma. And it doesn't really matter, I mean, that here, yes, there might be something else beyond these vertices. That's what I'm hiding in the induction. What happens there. So, in this situation, either I find a smaller cover, or I find an augmenting path, and the only, and simply the things I have for gamma prime, I use for gamma. Just for the vertex cover, I add V back in, and for the augmenting path, as I said, if it involves this new edge, I replace this new edge with these, which will keep it an augmenting path. So, that's the one case. The other case is there is no edge in the matching that both endpoints of the edge are in the vertex cover. And since I assume that my matching is strictly smaller than the vertex cover, that means I must have one vertex in the cover which is not matched. That is a free vertex. So, because the size of the matching is strictly smaller than the size of the cover, there exists a vertex V in the cover that is free, that is not matched. And what I want to do is I want to build an augmenting path starting from that free vertex. How am I going to do that? So I have the vertex V in the cover, which is free. Because it is free, it must be on an edge, which is not part of the matching, and on that edge it will be adjacent to some vertex. Let's call that vertex W. And now, because of the assumption that there are no two vertices on two cover vertices on any edge in the matching, this means there exists that is free. So I have an edge VW in the set of edges where W is not part of the cover, because otherwise I would be in case one. So W is not part of the cover. Right. Now I claim that I can assume, if W is also free, then I'm done. Right? If W is free, then we are done, because I simply can take that edge, make it part of the matching. That is an augmenting path of length 1, and I'm done. So, I only need to look at the case that W is not free, that W is matched. So, if W is matched, then I can make it, then I know there must be a matched edge, and it must be adjacent to some other vertex via a matched edge. So I have some other vertex X here, because the vertex cover property X has to be part of the vertex cover, and yeah, I must have this matched. So let's suppose that I have an edge W, X is part of the matching. Right. Now what I claim is I can choose X so that X also is incident with some other non-matched edge. Okay. Why can I do this? Well, I have V, I have W. I started with V, I picked a W. Now, let's suppose that that this was not possible, that I couldn't choose a path which goes from X, or there wouldn't be another edge incident to X for any choice of X, and any choice of W and any choice of X. That would mean I would I would change in the vertex cover. I would remove the X's, I would remove V, and I take all the W's. And that would make a smaller vertex cover. Right? Then I have a smaller vertex cover. So, then X is incident to another edge. Another edge. Otherwise, there is a smaller cover. Namely, I take all the, instead of V's and all the X's for all possible V's, I would just take the possible W's and remove V and all the X's. And that would still be a vertex cover, which is smaller. Okay, so now again I want to make the graph smaller, and what I'm going to do is I'm simply going to remove these two vertices and the edges which connect. So now, if I remove these, I get a smaller graph, gamma. So consider gamma. Gamma prime, V prime, E prime, with the V prime is the vertex set without the vertices V and W, and the incident edges go away, then in this new graph, X is a free vertex, right? Because if this edge has gone away. And in the new graph, I have again, if I just look at what remains, I removed one edge of the matching, and I removed one vertex in the cover. So the new graph again has the property that it has a matching which is strictly smaller than the cover. And I can apply induction, and the induction will fall again, will now fall into case 2. So that's how I would do it in an algorithmic setting. In an algorithmic setting, I just would say go here and start build this path further. For the proof, for the induction, I just say this new graph, in the new graph, in gamma prime, I have that the size of the matching. What do I want? I want the matching in the new edges is strictly smaller than the size of the vertex cover in the new, restricted to the new vertices. So by induction, I either have a smaller cover. That smaller cover together with V would give me a smaller cover for the graph gamma, or I have an augmenting path, And if this augmenting path involves X, well, in the old graph, X was not free, then I just add these two edges to the augmenting path and have an augmenting path in the graph. And that, so I can also translate the augmenting path, and I'm done. So in both possible cases, in both situations, I can start with a matching which is smaller than the size of the cover, and I'm guaranteed either the cover was chosen too big and I get a smaller cover, or I get a matching, get an augmenting path which lets me increase the size of the matching. And then I just iterate that process as long as I can. Yeah. So, for the maximum... Yeah, sorry, let me first say that completes this proof. And to find the maximum matching, I simply need to build the path. I find augmenting paths in this way, and that way build the larger, build, make the matching larger and larger. Okay, this is probably, this is a little bit technical in the proof, and as I said, because it tries to somehow be at least semi-constructive in that one can, could use this to actually build an algorithm. What it actually also would do is in some way this would, one could use this just to prove Koenig's theorem from scratch, because we are not really using Koenig's theorem anyway here in the proof. There is a related case I briefly want to mention. Sometimes you don't just want to find a matching of maximal size, but you have weights on the edges and you want to have a matching of maximum weight. So that would be the situation where you don't want necessarily to get the maximum number of people buying cars or whatever, but you want to choose those which give you that, oh, those buy, overall buy cars that you make maximum profit. What can you do in that situation? If we assume that the weights are integers, we can actually do a silly trick. So if we want maximum weight of a matching, what we can do is we replace an edge with a weight W with, by putting in further vertices, making some zigzag construction where we have W many, bold, where we have W bold edges. Right? I make my new graph larger by simply introducing new vertices with edges like this. And if you now look in this new graph, now all edges have weight 1. And if before you matched these, you now have W many edges in this matching. So a maximum matching in this new graph corresponds to a matching of maximum weight in the old graph. And that's how I could deal with the situation. Find a matching of maximum weight. Okay. Right. There is one more matching concept I want to look at. And that matching concept is that of a stable matching. And that is actually a problem which also had become quite prominent. In fact, it's not exactly on the right day, but it's still in the right week. The Nobel Prize for Economics in 2012 was awarded for work on stable allocations, which is exactly a stable matching. So, what do I mean by a stable matching? Let's assume you have a group of couples, say men and women, and or you have applicants and jobs or so, and you have the match that everyone is assigned, every applicant is assigned to some job. Well, now suppose you have a person who is currently assigned to some job, and another job would still be available for that person. And that other job would prefer that person, and that person would prefer the job. Or in the case of men and women, suppose you have two couples, couple one and couple two, so that man two prefers woman one and woman one prefers man two. Right? So they are currently matched like this, but there would be a preference for being matched this way, and this preference would be for both vertices. Well, then these two people can improve their situation individually by saying, let's rather match like this. And that would break the matching. So if this can happen, the matching is called not stable. And if it can happen, it is stable. And there are very relevant situations where this is used. For example, there is a big practical problem which occurs every year. This is in the US with medical students who finish medical school. They have to do training for a certain period in hospitals. And they say they want to go. There are some hospitals which say we have positions open. There are the medical students who graduate, and the medical students say, we would prefer to go there. Say they would rather go to Fort Collins than to Greeley. The hospitals will also say, we rather have the medical student from this school or this particular student who has better grades or whatever than this other student. So, in both cases, students and hospitals have preferences. And what you want to do, you want to match them up that there is no pair like this where they could say, no, actually, let's not take the ones we got, let's do it differently, and we both improve our situation. So, there is a desire to produce such a stable matching. And obviously, the first question is, do stable matchings always exist? That's not obvious. And it turns out not only do they exist, but you actually can construct them relatively easily. And that's what I want to describe. So it's an algorithm, but if you want, just interpret it as a constructive proof. So this is algorithm 4-7, and this is called the deferred acceptance algorithm. And this algorithm is due to Gale and Shapley. Shapley is one of the two people who was awarded this Nobel Prize. I think Gale already had died by the time, and that's in part the reason why he didn't get the award as well, since Nobel Prizes are not awarded to dead people.
Is this in like sociology or?
In economy. There is no Nobel Prize in sociology. No. There is the one social science which is solid, and that's economics. So, because they use mathematics. Okay, so what does this algorithm do? We temporarily, and the way I describe it is with students and colleges, so I don't have to break up marriages or something. Let's assume we have students and colleges. So we you have a group of students, they apply for positions in colleges. There is exactly the right number of positions there, but the colleges have preferences for certain students, and the students have preferences for certain colleges. These preferences don't... what we need is implicitly that this is some total ordering, that for any pair of students, the college would have a clear preference, and for any pair of colleges, every student would have a clear preference which one they want. So that's the one assumption which in the real world might not always hold exactly, or where you need to put in some tie-break things, but... So that's the only assumption.
So somehow like a ranking of these schools?
Yes.
First choice, second choice?
Yes, but it doesn't need to be a global ranking. It can be an individual ranking for every student.
Okay.
Student A says, I have an aunt in Greeley, and therefore I like to go to Greeley. Student B says, the beer is better in Fort Collins, and or whatever criteria you want to put on. So what we're going to do is we allow ourselves to temporarily assign a college to a student or a student to a college, but these are temporary assignments, and these assignments we are allowed to break again. And what we will do is we will build this assignment and we will change it over time. Furthermore, we have some list of indicators. First, we have an indicator for the students, which is called rejected. That means that student currently doesn't have a college available. And we allow I think that's what we have to do. Okay, so what does this algorithm do? Step one, we simply initialize, we initialize every student as rejected. And that's just saying they're all free, they all need a college space. Well, and step two is also very easy. That's the termination criterion. If no student rejected, then we stop. Then every student is assigned to a college, and we will see from the way how the algorithm works that this can only stop if this is a stable matching. Okay. And now come two steps. There is a student choice and there is a college choice. So, the first is every rejected student applies to the highest ranked college that did not yet reject that student. So the students also carry a list which just indicates for every college, has this college ever rejected me? So, the students do this. So there is some student who currently doesn't have a college, looks at the list of colleges, which ones rejected me. Well, let's say Berkeley and MIT rejected me, and now I have the choice between Fort Collins and Boulder, and clearly Fort Collins is ranked higher, so I apply to Fort Collins. Okay. And now comes the college choice. So, CSU now has a number of students who said, I would like to go here. And let's for the moment just assume that every college has one, right? The assumption is every college has one free seat. If you have multiple free seats, this is more common. So, for this one free seat, there are multiple students applying. The college says, I take the one whom I prefer. Takes the preferred student, or and that is the crucial thing, possibly rejecting the current choice. Okay, so if from a previous round, say CSU had said, yes, we take Alexander, but now Gabi applies, and CSU said, we rather have Gabi, they would reject me, move me out as currently not having a college assigned, and would take Gabi. And temporarily you would be there, but in further rounds things still could change. So, well, and then you go back to two. Go to step two. Okay. So, what does this algorithm do? Assuming there are students which are rejected, they apply to colleges. Well, to their top, everyone applies to their top choice. Which has not yet rejected them. So, what will happen is, either they all get rejected, right? Okay, then we go back, still same number of students, same set of students which doesn't have an assignment. The college rejected them all, then they apply to the next one on their list and so on. But since also every college wants one student, it means there should be really one college which currently, since we have the same number of students and the same number of colleges, what really will happen is if there are K students who don't have a matching, there are K colleges which need a student. And these students, at some point at least, will get, because all other places rejected them before, will get to one of these colleges in the list of K colleges which currently don't have a student. They apply there, even if they all apply to the same, that college will have a preference among these students and will take that student, rejecting the one they currently have. So what will happen is in this process, is that, and if the college before had a student, yes, then they reject them. So in the process, and this is asymmetrical, the students are basically moving down possible choices because they get rejected, and the colleges get potentially better and better students. Well, why does this have to terminate? Because the list, every time a student isn't in the, either isn't taken or is thrown out, their rejection list grows larger. And there are finitely many students and finitely many colleges. These lists can't grow infinitely long. That can only happen finitely many steps. So this process must terminate. And if it terminates, how can it terminate? It can terminate only if no student is currently rejected, so they all are matched with a college place, but This college place is for the student the highest rank which hasn't rejected that student. So this is for the student as good as they can go. And for the college didn't have the chance to get any higher ranked student. Because these students wanted to, or a student that's college ranked higher, because these students didn't say, I want to go there. They applied to schools they personally ranked higher. Therefore, this is a stable matching. And since the algorithm terminates, we know it must produce a stable matching, therefore a stable matching exists. It is not unique if you switch the role of students and colleges. As I said, the students move down, the colleges move up. If you do so, actually what it produces is a solution which is, and that's also what the medical matching program does, it's the best possible solution for the colleges, it's the worst possible solution for the students among the stable matchings. And if you do it the other way around, you might end up with a different matching, which also still is stable. But still, it produces one which otherwise is not clear from the start. And as I mentioned, there are very relevant practical applications of this matching process. Yeah, and that's a good point to stop. Yeah, thank you very much. Have a nice weekend.